Second hour on this Wednesday, Next Man Up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman joined live in studio by Corey Curtis from News 2. Parker Kelly at the controls, broadcasting live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We are finishing up our 7-round Titans mock draft. So far, I really like what we've done.
All right.
Jeremiah Love, the pick at 4. We had to decide between Love and Arvell Reese as Bain and Bailey went 2 and 3. Then at 35, Zion Young was the pick, went edge over some good wide receiver options. Skylar Bell, wide receiver out of UConn at 66. And then on day 3, Jake Slaughter at 101, the center from Florida. Efficiency Prysock, long, tall cornerback from Washington at 142. Tristan Lee, offensive tackle out of Clemson at 144. Titans are on the clock at 184. And Parker, we decided during the break, we think we're going to go safety here. And, you know, keep it in Middle Tennessee. Jacoby Thomas. From Miami, played at MTSU. He's a Tullahoma native, and I think that's a good pick. Brings in some depth in that safety room.
Well, you know, the last MTSU safety to play for the Titans did okay.
It worked out pretty well, yeah.
There's another one who just got paid to go play for the Cardinals, I think.
Right, yeah, Reed Blankenship.
Yeah,
Texans.
So, Texans.
Texans,
sorry.
Yes. Sorry, Texans. So we will go with Jacoby Thomas there. And so he is the pick at 184. Up at 194, let's see. Maybe some help on the defensive line would be good here.
Or linebacker.
Linebacker could be good. Let's see. Linebacker, Lander Barton. He is the best linebacker available.
Let's take him. Let's make him. Dude, I love Cody. And I know people like bang on him. He's one of my favorite people in that room.
Owen Heineke's still there, Oklahoma.
I think you could probably get Owen as a preferred walk-on.
Lander Barton is the 195th ranked player. You're picking at 194?
I'm good.
All right,
Lander
Barton.
He's long.
I like it. And again, linebacker is one of those rooms where I feel okay about the starters right now. I think you need some depth. So Lander Barton is the pick at 194. We got one pick left.
Is Bryce Betcher still on the board?
Bryce Betcher is still on the board.
Oh, man. I would have liked him there. Dude played center fielder at Oregon in college.
Yeah.
Got some side-to-side agility.
Let's see. 225 is coming up. Man, some tight ends just went off the board. That was kind of the position I was going to look at here. Let's see. I feel like you're not picking for need in the seventh round, obviously.
Who are the top five available?
Top five available. Some Clemson players here. Adam Randall, running back Clemson. Cade Klubnik, quarterback Clemson. Yeah. Colin Wright, cornerback Stanford. Jeff Caldwell, wide receiver Cincinnati. And Tyreek Sapp, edge rusher from Florida.
Yes.
Actually, like Sapp.
Yep. So I said that's the pick.
Sapp's the pick. All right. Seventh round pick, Tyreek Sapp. And that should wrap up
our mock draft.
You could
probably keep him on your practice squad.
Yeah. Most seventh round. I mean, Jalen Harrell is the guy he'd be competing with for the last spot in that edge room. Jalen Harrell was a seventh round pick. Now, he's proven that he can play rotational player in that room, but at least it pushes him a little bit, adds a little more competition. So there you go. Our seven round mock draft for the Titans is done. Jeremiah Love is the pick at number 4. Zion Young at 35. Skylar Bell, 66. Jake Slaughter at 101. Efficiency Prysock at 142. Tristan Lee, 144. And then wrap up with Jacoby Thomas, Lander Barton, and Tyreek Sapp. I like it.
You happy?
I'm happy. I think you added some depth at positions you need it, and you also added some top-end talent in Love, Young, and Bell, who hopefully can be key players for you for the next 5 years.
It's the worst when you're cranking out mock drafts and, like, none of the picks go your way, and you always end up pinching your nose and making a pick.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like we really pinched our I think the third-round pick for the wide receiver was the kind of the toughest call that we had.
Yes, I agree.
But I think the rest of them were pretty easy.
Yeah, it is nice when these mock drafts work the way you hope, and it's like, all right, there's the guy that I kind of was hoping to get in this spot. And
I mean, I guess the tackle from Clemson as well.
Right, that one was – it wasn't a nose plug, but it was just like –
But he was the highest-rated player on the board, and I wanted to take a tackle.
Right.
So, you know, that all worked out.
No, I like it. I think you add Love, and that is an immediate playmaker for your offense, and it helps Cam Ward out by establishing the running game, but also gives him a safety valve. You add a young, talented player on the edge in Zion Young, where I've said it all offseason. You have ignored edge for way too long early in the draft, and Femi is a good start, But Femi was a developmental player. You need somebody who can come in and play.
Yeah.
And Zion Young hopefully can do that. And you add some depth at other spots, as well as Jake Slaughter, who could come in and be a starter right away at center. I like it. And we'll take your thoughts on our phone and text line, 615-737-1025. Let's go to the phone lines. Chad in Hendersonville is called in. Chad, thanks for calling. Good morning.
Morning, guys. Good stuff. You know, the way I look at these drafts, and the Titans would be no exception, is I am taking, I don't know if there's 350 or how many other players I want to rank, and I'm ranking them 1 to 300. And I'm spending the last, 3 months, 4 months with every resource, with every guy in my organization, ranking these players, just a big board, from 1 to 300. And I don't ever want to hear the term need, position. I don't care. I really don't. And, what happens is these general managers, there's a million examples in these drafts. These guys are all coaches and general managers are fighting for their jobs. And they're not looking out really for the best interest of the franchise.
Which is
they're
why the GM who can needs we get. To make the pick.
And the GMs make the pick, but the GMs, have a shelf life of like 5 years. And there's been numerous times the Titans have been on the clock, even in the Jeff Fisher era. He's trying to make a pick to save his job.
Yep.
He doesn't give two craps about the Titans 10 years from down the road. Nobody does.
No.
And so I don't want to hear the word need or position. The Titans, we could use some depth at the offensive tack. No. You're drafting absolutely with every resource imaginable, the best player available, period, with almost zero exceptions. You're going to find an exception. Obviously, if you come down the line and you find out safety is, your top-rated player, going down the line, you've already drafted a safety, you have to maybe deviate from that one spot. But it's best available player regardless of position. If the Titans have the number one pick, you know who they're drafting? Fernando Mendoza.
No, they're not.
And if you're sitting with two quarterbacks, pardon me?
No, they're not.
No, you have to treat that pick as...
Oh, come on, bud. Come on, bud. Then you don't know what you're doing.
Chad, you're telling me Fernando Mendoza...
value?
You're saying Fernando Mendoza is the best player in this draft.
Well, then you're trading that pick.
That's a point. If you have the number one... If that's the most valuable pick, then that would be a little bit of an exception. But the point is, you are drafting the best available player. But you got to look at Mendoza, the value he carries. So if you can take that pick and trade it for two or three number ones, you're taking that pick. It's value. It's basically stocks and bonds, bro.
If you
it's
can trade it, for
what
sure.
carries
yeah.
more
they're,
value?
They're not picking Mendoza. They're trading the pick.
No,
that's
they
how
would
you
trade
build
it.
A franchise. You build a franchise by adding more value when you add personnel. You're adding more value. You're not drafting, hey, I really like this.
But
Mendoza I really
is
like this,
worth
a wide receiver.
More before he ever plays
right.
than when he gets on the
you're,
field.
Well, then you're wise with that, right? Because you're capitalizing on value.
Yes.
You're taking that pick and then you're trading it.
Yes.
The point is it's value. It's not need of position. I really would like to shore up the offensive line. So let's look here at pick, 37 here and we'll get this center. No. You're taking the best physical player, the biggest, most value you can find.
See, we
you
got a center
everywhere.
With the first pick in the fourth round who I didn't know would be available there and who I think can start for my football team. We took the tackle.
Where does he sit would be my question on your big board.
If you've got
a wide receiver, you've got a quarterback that you've got rated one spot ahead of him, hey, Ozzie Newsome, how did he build those Baltimore? He drafted best player available with almost zero exception. That's the secret, my brother.
Thank you for the call, Chad. And I think that call started off as a good point of like, hey, you should be taking best player available.
And he is right about that.
But
he just went too far away.
And then we just fell off a cliff.
He was offended when I said you're not taking Fernando Mendoza. Is Fernando Mendoza the best pound-for-pound player in this draft?
No, but that doesn't matter. He's the first pick. And so you're trading the pick.
But he contradicted himself even by his own. He said, rank him 1 through 300 and take the best player on the board no matter what.
Nobody,
he said, if you have the first pick, you take Fernando Mendoza. Fernando Mendoza is not the best player in this draft.
I don't know if anybody has him ranked number one as the best player.
No.
I think people have Caleb Downs ranked as the first player. They have Jeremiah Love ranked as the first player.
Well, in the way he's putting it, it's like, all right, you come to the clock nine times in a draft. The number one player on your board is a cornerback every single time. Yeah. Are you taking nine cornerbacks?
Well, look, like, he's not entirely wrong. The GMs, they do rank the players.
Yes.
Like 1 through 300. They rank them.
Yes.
And then they kind of sub-rank them.
It's a horizontal vertical board. Yes, yeah.
By position. And so, and there is positional value that gets weighed into it. You know, there's more value for an edge than there is for a safety.
Right.
And so if you have two guys who are really close, you know, that can weigh into it. You know, you do need to simplify things. You don't need to oversimplify things. 100%. Otherwise you could just program your list into a computer.
Right.
And then just press go on draft
day. Yeah, spit out who's the top player on our list. Send in the card.
And that's not the way it works.
He says, I don't want to hear anything about positions. Different players are going to have different values to different teams. For the Titans, you just spent the first overall pick on a quarterback. So Fernando Mendoza is not nearly as valuable to you as he would be to the Jets or the Raiders. For the Bengals, who have, they're spending, close to $100 million on Chase and Higgins?
Mm-hmm.
A wide receiver in the first round maybe isn't as valuable to them as a pass rusher.
Or maybe it is, so that they can move on from one of those guys.
Right, I don't know. But you're right. If it was as simple as rank them 1 through 300 and spit out the queue, the draft wouldn't be nearly as interesting as it is.
Yeah, and I always say there are teams that didn't pick Adrian Peterson because they had a running back. There are teams that didn't pick Aaron Rodgers because they had a quarterback.
Yes.
And a lot of times that can be short-sighted because you can't not pick a great player because you have somebody.
Yes.
All right. You're allowed to get better at those spots.
Right.
It's kind of like what we're talking about with Jeremiah Love at number four. The Titans have Tony Pollard. Tony Pollard's a good player.
Right.
But we're talking about replacing him with a guy that we think is a generational type player. And so, you know, that's why we say, you know, Jeremiah Love, when the Titans pick at four, if Jeremiah Love is on the board, he's probably the best player on the board for most boards out there.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what we're talking about. When we took the offensive tackle, he was the best player on the board. It fit a need and it fit the value. And again, like I said, you know, we took a guy in the fourth round who we think can be a starter.
Right.
I'm never going to apologize for that.
It's one of those things where it's not one side or the other. It's not completely best player available. Whoever is the top player on your board, you pick him. Yeah. But you also don't want to get too caught up in drafting for need. If there's a player you think is going to be a good player, you take him and you figure out how he's going to fit into the roster later.
I'm like 80% of the way there with him.
That's what I said. Like, he started off on the right foot.
Yeah, but it just went a little, like most things nowadays, it went a little too far.
Well, right, and he's talking about creating value for the team. What value does having
two quarterbacks,
Fernando Mendoza and Cam Ward, one of them
draft Mendoza, teams know you're desperate to get rid of one of your quarterbacks.
Right.
And so the value goes down.
It's like a car. It loses value the second you drive it off
the line. That's right. And so, you know, the value is in before the pick is made.
Right.
And so that's when you make the trade.
No, and I understand what he was – I don't know what point he was trying to make. Like, if you had the first pick, you'd trade it.
Yeah.
And you'd get value for it, sure.
Again, if you had the first pick, you probably aren't picking Mendoza because you don't have him ranked as the highest rated player on the board.
Right.
So
– exactly. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. We'll get to some of your reaction on the text line about our mock draft when we come back. We'll talk some college basketball later on this hour as well. Jake Lyman, Corey Curtis, Parker Kelly, next man up, 1025 The Game. Tee it up with us at the 5th Annual 615 Open, May 28th at Hermitage Golf Course. We are once again supporting Folds of Honor to help them fund life-changing scholarships for families of America's fallen heroes. Register now to play or sponsor at 615open.com. Jake Lyman, Corey Curtis, Parker Kelly, next man up, 1025 The Game. We did our 7-round mock draft. I won't go through all the picks. They're out there on Twitter for you if you want to check it out, at Lyman Jake on X. But the first three picks, Jeremiah Love, Zion Young, Skylar Bell. Did get Jake Slaughter at the top of the third round as well, who could start at center. Couple of texts on the text line. Lenny says you guys will probably get mock fired. I thought it was okay. Lenny likes to jab at us a little bit.
I just want to know what, you know, And that's fine. But what don't you like about
right.
it?
Right. That would be my question. Like, what picks would get us Mock fired?
Because I like this draft.
I think it worked out well.
I think even at 225, I think Tyreek Sapp is good value.
Yes. And it adds some depth to that edge room, even though I think even with the Zion Young pick, you feel like you've got your five pass rushers mm-hmm. pretty set, but it can't hurt to add competition. Here's an interesting question that we can wrap up this conversation on. Alex from Montreal, because we were given the choice of Jeremiah Love versus Arvell Reese.
Yes.
David Bailey, Reuben Bain went off the two picks before.
Yeah.
If it was Love versus Bailey, I said I would pick Bailey. Would you go Jeremiah Love or David Bailey?
I'd be sitting here hemming and hawing. I really would. I would. And the thing is that completely changes the draft. Well, it doesn't completely change. It changes the second round.
Right, because you then haven't addressed an offensive weapon for Cam yeah. Ward, which...
Well, I guess if you take a receiver then in the second round, then it changes your third round.
Right. And maybe you go Jadarian Price in the third round, and boom, you just flip the order around.
I don't think he's going to be there.
I don't think so either. I saw Daniel Jeremiah had him going 32nd.
Yeah.
So into the first round. That's one. I go Bailey. I think Bailey is the nice merger of what makes Arvell Reese a good prospect and what makes Reuben Bain a good prospect. You get the best of both worlds with David Bailey.
I really like Bain.
I struggle with it. This is the one thing. If the Titans take Reuben Bain on April 23rd, it's going to be a tough show for me on Friday. Because
oh, yeah. Not me. I really like Reuben Bain.
I love the player. And if you listen back to our shows after the college football playoff, I was all in. Reuben Bain, yeah. He can be the fourth pick. It's just the idea of picking a guy who is an exception to the rule.
He got cold feet. Corey.
I got cold feet.
Watch the tape. Just watch the tape. He's a violent, physical, explosive football player. He's a bulldozer. He's thick from the waist down. He's not going to get hurt. Okay? He can collapse the pocket. I mean, look, if they were still playing a 3-4, then yeah, all right, I'm not going to probably take him. But they're in a 4-3 now, and I think in that 4-3, I think he's really good.
I think you look at every draft pick is a risk, right? There's no sure things.
No.
I think David Bailey is like if you're playing roulette and you're betting on red or black. Like, that's
50-50.
Not
even. That's like 48.
As in if you're going to get a star player, right? Like I view it as a much safer bet. With Reuben Bain, I'm looking at it based on what you've – and this is just based on what the guys who are like them have done in the past.
I think what you're trying to say, and I'm going to try to put words in your
go
mouth,
ahead.
Is Bailey has a higher ceiling.
I don't even know if I would say that. I think he has a higher floor.
Oh, okay.
Like, I think Reuben Bain,
I think Bain has a higher floor, but maybe a lower ceiling.
Reuben Bain, his arm length, like, no one with that short of arms has ever had a 10-sack season.
I'm willing to bet Bain breaks the record.
That's a big bet to make.
I'm willing to make it.
Okay, and that's what I'm saying is if Mike Borgonzi is willing to make that bet, just know that if he gets fired, it's because you looked and you said, everybody else who's taken a player with that short of arms, they failed. This one's different. And if he's not different, everybody can point to and say, all the historical data was sitting right there in front of you and you ignored it.
Okay, but we all remember Mike Mamula, right? Or Mike Mamula,
yeah,
as the commissioner called him. Off the charts measurables at the combine. Off the charts.
Yeah.
And just a mediocre NFL player.
No, and I understand. There's plenty of examples of guys who are
off
physically built and they're
Nicholas
freak
Petit
athletes.
Frere.
Right.
6'5", 315, five-star player, agile.
And that's what scares me about Arvell Reese, right?
Andre Dillard, giant, looks like a professional wrestler.
Arvell Reese is one of those guys, too, where it's like you look at the physical tools you say he's a dude. But he didn't produce. That's why I think Bailey, you've got the best of both worlds. He sacked the quarterback. He has production. And he's got the traits that make you think, hey, that's central casting for a pass rusher in the NFL. With Reuben Bain, you are saying that he has to be the exception to a 20-year rule of there has not been a sub-31 inch arms pass rusher drafted in the first round in 20 years.
But
you're going to take him fourth overall.
Are we talking about stand-up edges? or are we talking about hand in the dirt defensive end? Because most teams have gone
edge three, player,
but most people have gone 3-4.
No, right? I understand that.
And he is the same position in a 3-4 as Jeffrey Simmons is.
He's undersized.
He's fine.
I just think
you know who sees the same size as Nick Bosa. He's the same size as Nick Bosa.
How long are Nick Bosa's arms?
I don't know, but Nick Bosa's a baller.
I understand. It's not
But you're saying he's undersized. Size. But Nick Bosa's not undersized.
But he can play on the edge because he has length.
All right. Reuben Bain is like putting Godzilla loose on the defensive line. He may have little tiny arms, but he will destroy everything in front of him. I have no concerns. No concerns.
If they pick him, I just look at it and say, Mike Borgonzi made a bet and ignored historical context with that measurement.
That's why you watch and you see how does he manage to overcome.
No, and I know, and I if you listen back to me talking about roommate, I love the player. I just think at four, it's too big of a risk.
Aaron Donald, 280-pound defensive tackle in an era where they're all 3'10".
Yeah.
And he's easily the best in the game.
Are you betting on Reuben Bain to be Aaron Donald?
No, but were the Rams betting on Aaron Donald to be Aaron Donald?
They did it at 13. I'd take Reuben Bain at 13.
No, but I mean, I think they took him at 10 or 11.
You might be right. But it was outside of the top 10.
It was shocking that he fell that far.
If the Titans traded down and took Reuben Bain, sign me up. I think at four, it's too big of a risk.
I disagree. But you know what? That's the beauty of it.
We're going to find out.
And again, I think we're a little different in that I like football players. And so I like to put on the tape and go, that dude's a player. And that's where it starts for me. The measurables are kind of like tiebreakers and like nuggets. But more than anything, I look at the tape.
I agree. And if he had 31.5-inch arms and it wasn't a complete anomaly, I think I could get behind it. But it's...
You know who else had short arms? Mike Tyson.
Yeah, I know he compared himself to Mike Tyson.
And it didn't matter. Mike Tyson destroyed everything in front of him.
But this is you're coming up with examples.
Yeah,
of guys who are exceptions
Godzilla,
to rules.
Mike Tyson,
and
the T-Rex,
if Reuben Bain is the pick at four, I will be rooting for him. I want the Titans to succeed. I just think at number four, it's too big of a risk. It's too big of a risk basically.
Look, they're all a risk.
You're ignoring historical context.
Yes, I am, because I can watch tape.
I can too. He's a good football player, and I think he's going to be a good football player. But
if I'm wrong, I'm wrong.
No, and me too. But if I'm wrong, I'm wrong.
If I'm wrong, if you're wrong on David Bailey, you're wrong.
I'd rather be wrong at 10, 11, 12 than 4. If you're picking the top 5, I think you got to find a guy who you feel good is going to be a 10-year pillar for your team.
Absolutely, I agree.
And you're betting against everything that's happened in NFL history to say Reuben Bain is going to be that guy. We'll get to your phones coming up next. 615-737-1025. We'll continue the conversation. We'll try and get to some college basketball later on in the show as well. But I want to continue this conversation. We got some texts. We got some calls. We'll get to you coming up next. Jake Lyman, Corey Curtis, Parker Kelly, next man up, 1025 The Game. Parker coming back with some Reuben Bain highlights as Corey and I got into one of our old-fashioned disagreements over Reuben Bain and his arm length.
You like King Kong. Like Godzilla.
Speaking of Mike Tyson, 1025 The Game and Team Boxing League have your chance to win a pair of VIP tickets as Nashville Smash takes on Phoenix Fury at Municipal Auditorium on Friday, April 17th. You can text the keyword FIGHT, F-I-G-H-T, to the game text line at 615-737-1025 to enter to win. Let's get your reaction. Corey thinks that you can bet on Reuben Bain as the player, even with the short arms. I say it's too big of a risk. Mm. Let's go to the phone lines. Kenny the mailman is called in. Kenny, always great to have you on. What you got for us?
Thank you very, very much. You know, we spend a lot of time talking about a symptom, but let me ask you, what is the real issue? Is the NFL draft an art or a science?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say it's more of an art. I don't think there was a science. Like, if there was a science, people would have perfected it at this point.
Well, I mean, not every peg fits in every hole.
All right. Puka Nacua had speed issues coming out of the draft.
Yep.
Dropped him to round 5.
Yes.
Did okay.
Right.
All right. And so, you know, it goes to the whole draft day. You know, what's his thing?
Yeah.
What's his thing, and can we live with it, and can we succeed despite it?
Did it seem to matter?
And so, you know, a lot of this is finding about what a guy's thing is, and is it too big of a problem? And you think his thing is too big of a problem. I think everything I've seen is, for him, it's not a problem. And so that's where we disagree.
Yeah, I almost want to say it's a scientific art.
Yeah.
Get your measurables in line, but you can't line them up 1 to 300 and pick them. You have to be able to adjust, float. What we don't see, you spend hours talking to behind the scenes to these guys.
Mm-hmm.
I have a condominium complex that's close to the facility, and each year, 7 or 8 of the rookies live on around. Some of them are the nicest people you've ever met. Had one that was functionally illiterate, and 2 or 3, I'm not joking, I would tell you off the record, and you'd go, yeah, I know that guy. And 2 or 3 that could not follow the simplest instructions.
Well,
and so it's like, you got to know the behind the scenes that they're never going to tell us.
Well, I think Isaiah Wilson is a perfect example of what you're talking about, because here's a guy with all the measurables in the world. I mean, he is the size of Sasquatch. I mean, he's just giant. But the Titans didn't learn that he didn't want to be a football player. Andre Dillard completely looks the part, but he's not a combatant. He doesn't like to rumble at offensive line. So you have to learn who these guys are, what makes them tick, what's going on inside their chest to find out partially if they're going to be successful on the field, Kenny.
When I see y'all at a remote, I'll tell you the behind-the-scenes story. One player wanted to hire me as his personal assistant because I knew how to pay checks and bills, and I was talking to him. And I said, don't you have an agent?
Yeah.
And they go, hey, they're supposed to line people up for you to do this. Some of these guys are just wandering around, bumping into walls.
Well, so, agents are happy to just take their money.
Yeah, we don't know the full story. Listen, y'all have a great day.
You too, Kenny. And I think you make a good point about the old, like, draft day is a flawed movie when it comes to the process of the NFL draft. But that is a good point of it's like everybody has something. No one is a perfect prospect. You have to find out if it matters. You know, and that's why I've come around on Jeremiah Love, because the only but with Jeremiah Love is, but he plays running back. And it's like everything else about him I really like.
Well, I know we got another call here, but I do want to bring up, like, Dave McGinnis is a guy I've talked to a lot because we used to travel with the Titans when I used to do the coaches show.
Yeah.
And so I would fly in the team plane and ride on the bus. And I would sit next to Coach Mack a lot because he coached with the Bears. And we would talk, we would have Ditka stories. Well, Jim Finks is one of the great NFL GMs of all time. He built the Bears in 85, and then he built that Saints team with all those linebackers. Back when he was the Bears GM, they had 4 scouts. 4. That was their entire staff.
Wow.
They weren't overcomplicating it.
Right.
Right? They found football players, and they drafted Richard Dent, and they drafted Dan Hampton, and they drafted Walter Payton, and they drafted Willie Gault, and they drafted Jim McMahon, and they drafted Keith Van Horn, and Jimbo Covert, and Mark Bortz, and Jay Hilgenberg. Draft. They drafted football players. They didn't get caught up in all the numbers. The numbers are important. I mean, they drafted Willie Gault because he had world-class speed.
Yep.
All right? That was part of it. But more than anything, they went and found football players. And so I think that's, for me, where it starts.
I agree with you. That's a big part of it. But they wouldn't measure the measurements, the measurables, if they didn't matter.
I agree with you.
And
you are deciding that Bain can't be successful based on his arm length. And
I'm saying it's too big of a risk that he's not going to be successful.
And I'm not worried about him being successful. If you were debating whether he was a better prospect than this guy because of arm length potentially, but you are like saying he is too big of a risk. There's a chance he could not be good because of that arm length.
I'm saying that if you look at all of the guys who have had his that short of arms, they haven't had success.
It's fine.
And they haven't been taken in the first round.
It's fine.
I'll show you some of the – there are two guys who have been drafted, not just in the first round, who have been drafted with that short of arms in, like, the last 10 years. And, like, that is how short his arms are.
Look, I just watched Godzilla versus Kong in Godzilla 1. All right? He dominated. His foot was on Kong's chest when it was over. Kong's arms were longer. It didn't matter. Godzilla's a powerhouse.
We just watched Will Campbell in the Super Bowl just get dominated.
He's a tackle.
I know, but he had the arm length question, and Mike Vrabel said, it doesn't matter, we're going to take him.
Yeah, well, and you know, he could also be a guard.
And maybe that's where he ends up. But
maybe.
Let's go back to the phone lines. We got some callers. Let's go to James on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. James, thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I'm just wondering, I think if Borgonzi picks this man, it's because he likes Bane. And as far as the arm length, my thing is, it's not the size of the dog in the fight, it's the fight of the dog, and, you know, you understand that.
Yeah.
And John Randall seems to be a classic example of that. He wasn't even drafted, and he was undersized, and nobody wanted him. Yeah, you see what I'm saying? So I'm thinking maybe there is something to this young man.
No, there's definitely something to the young man. We're just debating about value at 4.
Yes.
And I think that, James, that's you know, one of the important things to consider here is, you know, Jake isn't saying – he's saying he'd love him at 11.
Yeah.
Love him at 11. He just doesn't love him at 4.
I think the risk is too big when you're trying to get a cornerstone player for your team.
And I have seen enough where I think he's the anomaly. I think he's a successful NFL player.
And you know, I get it that he is that good when you turn on the tape. Like as it was Robert Saleh who said, his tape is undeniable. And I agree. The tape is ridiculous.
He's Thanos. He is inevitable.
He is so much fun to watch. It's just, I struggle with...
He won it with me with the haircut at the combine. Or the lack of one.
Yes. I'm yeah, like, just all over the place.
This dude just wants to play football. Give him to me. Like, maybe this is a long branch to stand out on. I don't feel like it is for me, but maybe it is. I like the player a lot. I like the player a lot, and that's it.
Let's go back to the phone lines once again. Adam from Portland is called in. Adam, thanks for calling. What you got for us?
Well, I already talked to Jake about this, but Corey, I feel like with Bane, because he's my favorite player, and I feel like I'm beating the table by myself now, and nothing's happened since then. Like, it was Bane would be a great pickup. Now he's got baby arms. Well, his baby arms didn't slow him down at all in the college football playoff when he dominated – every good team in college football by himself. Like, he was the dominant player that we remember. Not Mendoza. Indiana was awesome, but we remember Bane carrying a number 10 Miami that far. That's what I remember. And I think hopefully everybody should kind of lock their head on that. He looks like somebody that the Steelers would have drafted in the 70s. Like, he looks like that guy. Like, he's – I don't know, man.
Minshew Green is pretty long,
arms. He's already proven his whole life that he can play with the arms as well as he can. So don't start judging it now. It's weird.
Well, look, people are going to judge because that's their job. All right, and they're trying to make sure they don't get it wrong. And like we said, you turn over every stone to find out what's this guy's thing. And quite obviously, arm length is his thing. And you have to decide, will it hold him up at the NFL level? He's right. It hasn't held him up at any level to this point.
Yeah.
He was one of the most dominant players in college football last year. You just watch him. He is a wrecking ball. A relentless wrecking ball. And so, you know, you have to decide. Now, do you think there's a possibility he winds up being a defensive tackle? I mean, I guess there's some people who think that could be possible, that he ends up putting on another 20 pounds.
Yeah, I think if you move him inside, he's going to have to bulk up. And
but then he's not the pass rusher that he is now.
Right, you're not getting the value that you want it for.
No.
I mean, and for Adam's point there, yes, he dominated in college. Peter Skoronski was a phenomenal left tackle at Northwestern.
Well, he also played like 4 positions in 4 years.
Well, I know he moved around, but like the reason he got drafted is because he played really good left tackle at Northwestern. He wasn't even given a chance to play left tackle in the NFL.
Yeah, but they knew when they drafted him he was going to play guard.
because he had short arms.
But that's but they valued him to play guard high enough to pick him at that spot.
I understand. And
the short arms were not a concern because they knew where they wanted to play him.
They also weren't historically short. They were short. Mm-hmm. They weren't historically short. We're never going to agree on this, and we're going to find out on April 23rd.
You know when we'll agree on it? When Reuben Bain's hoisting the Lombardi for the Titans.
When Reuben Bain gets his 12th sack as a rookie, I will, you know.
Let's play this. I know we got to go to break, but before we go to break, Reuben Bain, say the Titans take him at four and take David Bailey's your guy.
Yep.
How many sacks would Reuben Bain have to have his rookie year for you to consider it a success?
8+.
And how about David Bailey?
What if if David Bailey is the pick versus
Bain. Would your expectations for Bailey be higher than it would be for Bain? Because they're two different players.
No, I think year one but what I'm saying is if I take a guy at four as a pass rusher, mm-hmm. I expect you to be a 10 sack a year guy at minimum.
Yeah,
and I think Bailey, when you look at the production in college and the frame and the physical traits, Bailey is more likely to be that guy than Reuben Bain.
Maybe. I mean, I see him, getting more sacks on a yearly basis? Yes. Do I see Bain being a more destructive play-in and play-out player?
Bain is a better run defender.
I see Bain playing behind the line of scrimmage a lot more, setting the edge a lot harder. And so that. Am I saying 10 sacks versus 14, but I'm getting a lot more on the other two downs? Maybe.
Yeah.
I'm willing to go there. I think that's part of my allure of Bain, is watching him all three downs, not just rush the passer.
Yeah. No, it's fair. I think Bain showed that he can be more of an all-around player on the defensive line than Bailey did. But
And the other thing that we've talked about, and I haven't brought up here today, but we've talked about before, is I like the violence level of Bain compared to Bailey.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean I don't like Bailey. If the Titans take Bailey at four, I'm not going to question it. He's had a great career. We're splitting hairs.
Right.
Over two really good players.
Right, exactly. And I always want to preface this with, I'm not saying that I think Reuben Bain should go undrafted because of the arm length. Like,
you're talking about it four.
As a top five pick, yeah. I think it's too big of a risk.
If you were picking at seven, you'd probably be good with it.
I think I'd feel better about it. Yeah. Well, and honestly, the trade down is part of it too. It's like, if I get Reuben Bain and an extra second round pick, sign me up for that.
Yeah.
But just Reuben Bain is too big of a risk. 615-737-1025. Fun conversation here in hour number two. We will wrap up the second hour coming up next. We'll talk some Preds in hour number three and much more. Jake Lyman, Corey Curtis, Parker Kelly, next man up, 1025 The Game. Next man up, 1025 The Game. Jake Lyman, Corey Curtis, Parker Kelly with you on your Wednesday morning. It's been a fun hour. Kind of got away from what we intended to do in this hour, but it's been a fun conversation looking at Reuben Bain and whether he could be worth the fourth overall pick. So during the break here, to wrap up this conversation, I looked up on mockdraftable.com.
Okay.
You can sort edge rushers from 2010 on by their arm length. Here are some of...
He didn't tell me he was doing this, by the way.
I did not. Here are some of Reuben Bain's...
Comps. Okay.
Caden Curry. All right. I'll stay away from the ones that are this year, which actually there are a few that are this year. Cassius Howell also would be included in this.
And there's a lot of people talking about him.
With short arms?
Yes. Cassius Howell, actually shorter arms than Reuben Bain.
Oh, my God. How does he eat?
I knew they were.
How does he function?
I knew they were short. I did not know they were that short. Nate Williams, defensive end, Ohio State 2013. Sutton Smith, Northern Illinois, 2019. Tyree Johnson, Texas A&M, 2022.
Him.
Ricky Elmore, Cheta Azugwu, Dean Lowry, Wyatt Hubert, Elijah Ponder, Ethan Downs, Marcus Golden. There's the first name that I recognize.
See, okay, and that's kind of my point here. We weren't talking about any of these guys being top 10 picks going into a draft. You're just picking guys who had short arms and didn't produce in the NFL.
But these are all of the guys who had short arms. The guys I've been reading
lately.
Yeah,
but none of those guys were Reuben Bain in college.
I get that, and that's why he's going to be a first-round pick. right? Like, he's going to be a first-round pick because of the production.
Yes.
But you're looking...
None of those guys produced like Reuben Bain. So what's the conversation? Give me a guy who produced like Reuben Bain, who has short arms, and then didn't produce in the NFL.
Trey Hendrickson is the first one I found that I'm like, okay, that's a dude. 32-inch arms, so over an inch longer than Reuben Bain.
He's okay. You know, he just got paid $30 million.
It's one guy, though.
Yeah, but you don't have another comp. Your comps stink.
Because Reuben Bain is...
Because none of those guys were Reuben Bain.
Reuben Bain is in the first percentile of arm length. Like, that is what I'm saying. It's not like he's 25th percentile of arm length, where there is no comp because no one has ever done this before.
Okay, so he's uncompable.
Yes.
That's fine, as long as we admit that. Look, if you came to me with five other guys who were dudes coming out of college, and they were like, hey, this guy's going to be a high first-round pick, but arm length is a question. But none of those guys are – I mean, what's the kid from Texas A&M? Tyreek?
I just closed it out.
I remember him.
The point I'm making is it's not – there are no comps because he would have to do something that no one has ever done before.
And you know what you could argue? He already has.
And that's why he's going to go in the first round.
Yeah.
But
so he's proven it's not a problem for him.
To go
where the other guys was a problem.
To go from not having a first-round pick in 20 years that has had that short of arms to being a top-five pick feels like a big leap.
I'm all right, man.
Keegan, who is on the Bane train, he's the conductor of the Bane train. He loves your comps suck comment. I don't have comps because there is no comp. He has that short of arms. It is in the first percentile.
Look, Russell Wilson's 5'10". He won the Super Bowl.
This is like if Russell Wilson was 5'6".
No.
Like,
No, it's not.
It's the first percentile.
Yes.
It is literally.
Okay. Russell Wilson is the first percentile at 5'10".
5'6" is probably an exaggeration.
Russell Wilson made it okay for Kyrie, or whatever his name is, the guy who just went to the Vikings
Kyler Murray.
Kyler Murray. He made it okay for Kyler Murray to get drafted first overall. He made it okay.
See, I'll end with this. I am okay if you pass on Reuben Bain and he turns into an all-pro because you followed the historical data that says that he's probably not going to be a star. Like, I am okay with passing on him if that's what Mike Borgonzi, I don't know if he'll ever say this, but if it's, hey, the arms were a problem for us, it's never happened before, we weren't willing to take that big of a risk, and he turns into an all-pro, I'm fine with that. Perfectly fine with that. But if you take him and he is a bust and you had all that data in front of you and you ignored it, that's a problem.
Here's the problem I have. If he goes out and he's an all-pro, all right, or just a pro bowler every year, and you ignored the data that was in front of you, which was 4 years of film at Miami of him destroying everything in front of him, then I got a problem with that.
It's not Reuben Bain or... a bum. You're picking Reuben Bain against the best players in this draft, and I would take some of the other players who don't have as big of red flags as Reuben Bain.
Okay. Let me ask you this. This is impossible. But say Love, Bailey, and Reese all come off the board. Or wait, no,
so,
no.
Mendoza.
Say it's Mendoza, Bailey, Love.
Okay.
You got Reese and Bain.
Give me Arvel Reese.
Wow.
Arvel Reese, at least.
Repeat that again.
If it's Reese versus Bain.
Like, if it's Mendoza, Bailey, Love in the draft. And so you've got Reese and Bailey and Bain.
You're going Reese.
I go Reese. I think, yes, you're projecting, but I think the red flag is smaller.
Oh, I think the red flag is he hasn't produced and didn't have a sack the last 6 weeks of the season.
That this is,
and you don't even know if he's an edge.
April 23rd is going to be fun. It is going to be fun. Especially,
by the way, it's April Fool's Day, and no one has pulled anything out.
I know.
Thank you.
615-737-1025 is the phone number. We will get to some Preds coming up next. Talk about a big weekend coming up for Nashville as they go out west. fighting for that final wild card spot. Jake Lyman, Corey Curtis, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game.